Hey guys, it's Lavetta.
And it's Miriam.
And this is the Notorious Women Podcast, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women.
Yes, yes.
We are back, baby.
Yes.
We are back. Season 7.
Pew, pew, pew.
That was terrible.
Really bad. Really bad.
But we are so thrilled to be back, listeners. I hope you missed us. We hope you are also doing very, very well. Remember to follow us on all the things. If you want to help us out, you can give us a 5-star review. That would really, really help the show. And I will be revisiting that.
Mm-hmm. We have been on break.
At the end of the show. I know. I literally been on the couch like watching stuff. I caught up on the show Average Joe. We'll have to talk about that another time.
But okay.
It's like
never
Breaking
seen
Bad, but with a black family kind of.
Oh, it's I'll watch not, that.
It's like really intense, though. I was like, I don't know if I have the energy. Like it moves really, really like Wait. Fast and intense.
Okay. As though Breaking Bad isn't really intense. Like,
yeah, this is why. I started watching it. I was like, I don't know if I'm ready for this because I need happy, happy these days. Like we all do. We all need happy, happy.
Absolutely.
And my niece was like, no, you should check it out. It's really good. And she's so right. And all of the female characters are written like real women who are smart.
What? Like, okay, now I have to watch this.
Yeah. Like, because you know, sometimes I get so annoyed with like, she wouldn't do that. That's not what you guys said. If you set her up as a smart woman, what she
like
wouldn't do
women
that.
Are yeah, they're dumbed down. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
They're so. Not any, you know, that's why we're here, right? Because they're not any dumber than men. So why are the men the smart ones and women the dumb ones? Doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense. And you know what? Actually, now that I think about it, it's not like Breaking Bad, it's more like the Ozarks, but with a black family.
Okay. Ooh, yeah. I never got into the Ozarks, but I could have. I watched
the Ozarks
first
is really good.
I started
and also
watching
very
it. Like too soon after Breaking Bad for me, and I was like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, but like you have to break it up with baking shows, your favorite.
You so. Understand me. Yes.
I saw last week I saw your post with your a cake with the blueberries on it.
I was just gonna tell you about that. Listen, okay, y'all, I know you're like, why are you not talking about fabulous women? Because I'm the fabulous woman. I made, this is so sad and pathetic. I made a lemon blueberry cake, like lemon cake with both blueberry and lemon frosting and like fresh blueberries. I am the next British baker. It's me.
So Miriam, I guess, is that my birthday gift?
It took me 5 hours.
No, I was going to say, that wouldn't be fair because your birthday is the day before mine. So that would not be fair.
Gift?
Yeah.
You can come to my house and we'll eat it together. Happy birthday.
I love lemon cake. I
Do
love
you?
Lemon cake. Oh my God. I love lemon cake.
Oh, maybe
but
I'll
it's hard
it
to find
again.
Good lemon cake.
Like, listen, my lemon cake is so good. I'm
going
to brag.
I love blueberries. So.
Oh my God. Right? Like it did legit take me 5 hours.
How was it?
So good. Oh my God.
Did you eat it all? Or did you
I am not quite done with it. Well, we had friends over and so we cut up slices and then we had leftovers and then I ate more and then we still have leftovers. So I'm going to eat more and then I'll have to make another one.
Yeah, at some point. So,
yeah.
Let's get started. So, welcome back, our listeners, on this season 7. Can you believe it?
That's season kind of incredible.
Seven.
How did we do that?
I don't know. Like, time is. You remember you're a kid and like you're like a whole year. It's so long.
And I'm like, yeah.
It's a year? Like,
no.
I just made plans for Thanksgiving. I'm like, Thanksgiving? Really?
And yeah.
Yeah. So, but let's get started. And my dear, I believe, let me just double check. But I believe you are, yes, you are first.
Okay.
This week to get us started with season 7. So who is your notorious woman this week?
Okay. So my notorious woman this week has It was inspired by Instagram. I know, right? We're all on it too much. But I saw her in a cute little like moment. And I was like, who's this woman? And I feel like you've probably heard of her because I feel like we had this conversation. Have you heard of Opal Lee?
Yes.
Okay, I'm not talking about
her.
Because
that is a very Southern old black lady name, Opal.
Yes.
And I think that's what Oprah was supposed to be named, actually. It was misspelled. I think it's supposed to be Opal. I think that was supposed to be her name.
Okay, so we could, if everyone goes back to that episode of Oprah, they will find out what she was supposed to be named.
Oh.
And I don't remember.
I think it's Opal. It definitely wasn't okra.
It was not okra. No, I don't think it was Opal, but it was something.
Because that's like an old school, like, yeah, Opal Lee. But.
So, and born in Marshall, Texas. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
On October 7th, 1927.
All right.
Okay. She was the oldest of three children. Her parents were Maddie and Otis. Flake is her maiden name. So her paternal great-grandmother was born into slavery in Louisiana. Okay. So that's just a little backdrop. When she was 10 years old, she and her family moved to Fort Worth, Texas. So they eventually moved to the 7th ward of Fort Worth, which is known as Terrell Heights. Now, on June 1939, her parents bought a house in the 900 block of East Annie Street, which was then a mostly white area. Can one imagine what might happen?
Aww.
So, June 19th, so like days later, yeah, 1939. Okay, she's 12 years old. 500 white rioters vandalized and burned down their home. Okay.
500 people showed
for
up.
For one fucking house. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I like
That's
to
terrifying.
Think like that I'm a journalist with journalistic integrities. I'm not, by the way. Don't come at me. I'm not. That I can share stories of people without having strong opinions about it. But I can't do that. They're horrible people, all 500 of them.
I mean, think about that. You're 12 and it's like right? Your mom, your dad, and maybe siblings. I don't know how many siblings she had.
Three kids
and
total.
So there's five of you in the house and 500 angry white people holding rocks, sticks, bats shows up outside your house.
Like she could have grown up to be a super criminal, like with abilities to fly and burn down whole cities. And I'd have been like, that's fair. That tracks. You know
what
I'm
saying? A super villain?
Yeah. I mean like a super villain. I mean like the Incredibles, you know, part four. I'm saying, you know, and I would be like, yeah, no.
But 500 people, 500. If 20 people showed up, it'd be terrifying. But
terrifying.
500 people. Wow.
Three people show up with torches. That's really scary.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So when she recalls this years later, she says, quote, "The fact that it happened on the 19th day of June has spurred me to make people understand that Juneteenth is not just a festival." So notice when they did it. Okay.
Mm.
So she went to I Am Terrell High School, which was Fort Worth's first black high school. She graduated in 1943 at the age of 16. She fell in love with a man named Joe Roland. They got married. They had four children and then divorced 5 years later.
Wait a minute.
And
I'm sorry. So what happened after the houses burned down? They had to move.
They moved and they kept going. And I just feel like these stories are so important, especially now when people seem to think that we have such protections in place. You know? Like, this isn't that long ago. It's 80 years ago. Like, well,
yeah,
about 80 in the
39,
40s.
Yeah.
So, like, no one got in trouble. You know what I'm saying? No one got in trouble. Come on.
I just don't even know. Also, the mindset of people who are like, yeah, let's go over there and scare these five people.
Three of which
are children. and you need 500 people to show up. Like, people. And then let's just burn their shit to the ground. Like, thank God nobody was killed.
Yeah. So that, I mean, I have so many thoughts. Again, she could be a supervillain and it would be right.
Yeah.
She would be right. So instead, she chose a better path than I would, clearly.
Yeah.
In 1952, she graduated from Wiley College in Marshall, Texas. She got her bachelor's degree in elementary education and taught at Amanda McCoy Elementary School for 15 years. She also worked nights at a place called Convair to support her kids. She also worked as a cook and a maid and a store clerk to support her family. So she's just working, working, working. In 1967, she married a man named Dale Lee, which is the last name we know her as, Opal Lee. So she was a teacher and he was a principal at a different school. And that's how they met. That's a cute, meet cute. Okay.
Yeah.
And then she went to North Texas State, where she earned her master's degree in counseling and guidance. So after she got her master's degree, she went back to Fort Worth, where she worked for Fort Worth Independent School District and also was a homeschool counselor for 9 years. On top of this, now remember, she has 4 children. Okay.
Okay.
She just makes me, I'm sorry, look so lazy. I can't. Like, I love her, but also I'm jealous. Okay. She was a member of the Fort Worth Tarrant County Community Action Agency Board, Evans Avenue Business Association Board, Tarrant County Habitat for Humanity Board, and Citizens Concerned with Human Dignity. And I'm here being like, oh my God, I have to go to the school fundraiser. Like, come on. I'm not on 4 boards to make the world better. Please. I'm so jealous. She's also a member of Zeta Phi Beta sorority. Okay, so Lenora Rolla is a civil rights activist who we probably should talk about sometime, right?
Okay.
And she had begun a campaign to chronicle the contributions by Black people to Fort Worth. And this campaign led to the founding of the Tarrant County Black Historical and Genealogical Society in 1977, of which Opal then became a member. Now, Lenora had been serving on several societies to prepare for the bicentennial, which is just for everyone, right? America, mm-hmm. bicentennial. And she realized that the history of Black people in that area was not available, this will be not surprising at all, in public universities or libraries. It was only available in private collections.
Oh.
Right. Because, you know, that's how you erase things. You know, like you just shut it down. Like Black people in Texas? No. Right. And she was like, fuck that. Yes, in Texas. So TarrantCountyHistory.org is still around and it's still excellent. They're still doing the work. You guys.
How do you spell
look it? Look it up. TARRANT CountyHistory.org.
TarrantCountyHistory.org. Yeah. Okay.
It's excellent. And I'm like, oh, well, every city needs this. Every county needs this. Like, and it can encompass just really everything they're not teaching in school, which is so many things.
Yeah.
So many things. So she became more involved in the history of Black people in Texas, specifically Fort Worth, because she basically spent most of her life there. But she remembered as a young girl in Marshall going to Juneteenth celebrations. Fort Worth did not have Juneteenth celebrations. So she was like, let me fix that. Because, you know, as people who choose not the supervillain path choose to do. So she helped the society organize in 1975 the first Juneteenth celebration in Fort Worth. More than 30,000 people attended and it became an annual event. Okay, so she retired from teaching in 1976, which is a great year because that's when I was born. Okay. I just told you my age. You guys, I'm 25, but I was also born in 1976. I know, I time travel. Okay. And basically when she retired was when she was like, okay, let me do all the things I really want to do. So she, in the 80s, she became involved with a local food bank, which expanded under her leadership and led her to start something called Opal's Farm. So she used land that was donated by the local government. She planted fields of watermelon, tomatoes, potatoes, greens, and other vegetables to provide fresh food to food banks, which is so, so necessary. And she hired workers who were formerly incarcerated and couldn't find any other employment. Wow. Yes.
She should have run for office.
I would vote for her all day.
Yeah, but she probably, it's a shame to say, but she probably has had more effect on people's day-to-day life in her area.
Yeah.
Having done what she did versus going for office. Yeah.
It's really true. And I just want to point out, just like, she used land donated by the local government, which means we still need a local government to give a little bit of shit about the people, right? Even though she's pulling up your bootstraps, you guys, you love that term, right? Not you guys. I feel like if you listen to us at this point, you hear me.
I know,
but
we're
like,
preaching to the choir, yeah.
I am preaching to the choir. But like, you know, we're coming up with like Thanksgiving, right? And you're going to go home. So you need like talking
points. I also love the practical solution. Like you said, get donated land from the local government, plant this and da-da-da-da to provide for to local food banks that, but also employ the recently released, you know, like from being incarcerated. And like, so it's like solution with one solution, like multiple small solutions. And yeah, like,
we need people like her running our system.
Yeah. Because, which I think at the top of the ticket, that's what we're getting if we vote right. Like
100%.
I love people come up with solutions.
If you make more than $100 million, then maybe, just maybe, you might have an argument against her. Okay.
But here's the thing. There's a lot of people who have more than $100 million who are still like, yeah, that sounds good.
Because I'm like, Gates society. Is like, yeah.
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 Mark Cuban's honestly, like, yeah, let's do this.
If I made more than $100 million, you could tax me more over, right? If I made $150 million, go ahead and tax $50 million of that, a little bit extra.
That's because you're not insane with greed.
That is an insanely greedy situation, right? You are beyond greedy. Could you really? Like, come on. You already have 17 houses. You need an 18th? Calm down.
But okay. Miriam, I need to be able to afford to maintain these houses when I'm not living there and pay for staff. So you don't understand you don't understand the rich person's burden. Okay.
Bitch, Airbnb it. Okay. Problem solved. Okay. Next time you're in the south of France, you know where to stay. Okay.
Oh, that'd be next season. That'd be the dating season of next year.
Okay. I don't think I'd make a very good, very rich person, but okay. I'm happy to try. Okay. So during this time, this is amazing. Okay. She originated a tradition of bringing Fort Worth city leaders on an annual bus tour through economically depressed area of Fort Worth. And she would point out landmarks that were important to Fort Worth's minority communities. Okay.
I love this woman.
Right. And I'm sure she's like charming and kind. And
I'm sure the leaders
are like, oh, Opal is lovely. Okay. I'll get on her little tour and they'll have a lovely time and she'll be like, help these people. She created the nonprofit organization Unity Unlimited, which has been in operation since 1994 and was officially incorporated in the year 2000. Now, she had been campaigning for decades to make Juneteenth a federal holiday. Now, she promoted the idea by leading 2.5-mile walks every year, which represented the 2.5 years it took for the news of the Emancipation Proclamation to reach Texas. Now, I feel like y'all know what Juneteenth is, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's very important to our American history, right? So I thought that was really clever. People love to get out and walk for something, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
And so she marched in Texas, but she also marched in Fort Smith and Little Rock in Arkansas. And she went to Las Vegas, Nevada. She went to Madison and Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Atlanta, Selma, Alabama, Carolinas. So at the age of 89, okay, she conducted a symbolic walk from Fort Worth, which she left September 2016 to Washington, D.C., where she arrived in January 2017. She was hoping to plead the case for a federal holiday directly to President Barack Obama. Now, she had helped campaign for him, mm-hmm. which makes sense. I just want to point out September 2016 and then arrived January, the amount of shit that went down in our country between September 2016 and January 2017. And she's still walking and she's 89 years old and she is not giving up for this important change. Like, I was crying a lot.
Yeah.
You know,
she's like a modern day Forrest Gump.
Oh my God. Totally. Yeah.
Love
Only
it.
If you asked why she was walking / running, she'd have been like, oh, to make Juneteenth a federal holiday.
Right, right.
And she Forrest an was answer. Like,
I don't know. Yeah.
So she promoted a petition for Juneteenth federal holiday at change.org, which received 1.6 million signatures. And she said, quote, it's going to be a national holiday. I have no doubt about it. My point is, let's make it a holiday in my lifetime. Okay. June 2021. At the age of 94, she succeeded, and her bill to make Juneteenth a federal holiday was passed by Congress and signed into law by President Joe Biden.
Aww.
Right? It makes me cry. She was an honored guest at the bill signing ceremony, and she received the first of many pens Biden used to sign the document. Aww. As she sat down, back down in the front row, she received a standing ovation, and Biden got down on one knee to greet her. Yeah.
Aww.
That's how you
decency.
Do it.
Decency. Yeah, that's how you do it.
Decency. Man.
Yeah.
She is also a member, I'm not even done, y'all, of the Transform 1012 North Main Street, which is a coalition of Fort Worth nonprofit and arts organizations working to turn a former Ku Klux Klan auditorium into a Fred Rouse Center and Museum for Arts and Community Healing. So Rouse was a black man who was lynched by a Fort Worth mob in 1921. So Transform 1012 North Main Street was formed in 2019 and announced the acquisition of the building in January 2022.
Oh.
She gets shit done.
Yes, she does.
I mean,
you're right. I bet she's charming.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone just wants to be around her. She was named 2021 Texan of the Year by Dallas Morning News for her activism for Black Texans. Damn straight.
Wow.
She was included in the 2021 book Unsung Heroes for operating a food bank, farm, and community garden through the COVID-19 pandemic. I feel like that book, Unsung Heroes, maybe needed to tell more about her story, not just that part of her story. But that's for another day. At least she's in there.
Yeah, that's true.
On May 14th, 2023, she received an honorary doctorate degree from University of North Texas. And on May 11th, 2024, she received an honorary doctorate degree from Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas. In 2024, she was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Joe Biden. Okay, I want to end with one quote from her, which I think is very beautiful and very inspiring. Quote, what we're trying to get people to understand is that Juneteenth is freedom. And I don't just mean for Black people or Texas people. It's freedom for everybody. It's so true.
Yeah.
It's just so true.
Listen. So true, if people will take that in and take it to heart, like we will not have all these problems. But, you know, but I just love, like, she is a woman of action. She gets shit done. Like you said, like.
Yep.
That's what I'm talking about.
She, I'll put it on our Instagram. There's the thing that I saw was she's 97 and all she wants to do is live to vote for Kamala. Like, that is her goal.
She's so sweet.
I know, right?
Oh my God. It she makes has me miss my heart. My grandmother. I know. It makes me miss my grandmother. I wish she had lived to be 97, but Opal Lee, I hope she's surrounded by love and support and let's do this. Thank you so much, Opal Lee.
Yeah,
Opal Lee. I love that. And I love that name. Opal's so pretty. Such a pretty name. Yeah,
really.
Thank you for sharing that like sweet and inspiring story to kick off our new season, because mine is not sweet. Yeah, I know you're surprised.
Shocked.
Even though she's not a murderess, even though I love a murderess, and let's be clear, I love a murderess who kills people who deserve it.
We got you.
Not, I don't like murderesses who kills like innocent, like old people or
not.
Like even unsuspecting poor dudes who are just trying to find love. Like, I'm not really.
You like murderesses who take karma into their own hands.
Yeah. Like, what's that genre? We need genre of like, we've had a few movies like that of women taking like those revenge, like vigilante women.
Yeah.
And not because she was raped or like that was big in the 70s. Just like, I need to rid the world of you motherfuckers. So
you shouldn't exist anymore.
Yeah, I digress. But my notorious woman, after that lovely one about Opal Lee, my notorious woman this week is a woman by the name of Christine Keeler.
Never heard of her.
Now, I was inspired because we are here in the United States, listeners, if you're not here, we are in the midst of a very intense election, presidential election that's coming up. Yeah. It's very intense every day. Lots and lots of activity, lots and lots of news, lots and lots of rallies. Yeah. And so I'm trying to sort of keep in theme of that, of like the political thing. So
I'm building hope. And what are you doing? Share with us.
Actually, I'm just spilling the tea because this is also very scandalous.
Let's do it.
I thought this would be fun. Like, this is a fun one. So, well, maybe not for poor Christine, but we'll see. We'll see at the end if we think that that's poor Christine. But okay. So Christine Keeler was born Christine Margaret Keeler on February 22nd, 1942. In Uxbridge, Middlesex, England, to Colin Sean, later known as Colin King Keeler, and Julie Ellen.
Okay.
Now, when she was very young, I would say around 2.5, 3 years old, Colin, her dad, abandoned her and her mother.
All right.
Because he's a charming motherfucker. Mm-hmm. Now, again, this is 1945. So the war is just ending. He abandons a almost 3 year old and a young woman who has no means of taking care of herself, just abandons them.
Jesus.
And by all accounts, Christine comes from a very humble background. So a very poor background. These are like people who need to work for a living. And even when they're working for a living, they're barely getting by. So, so Colin's like, yeah, I'm out. As a consequence, poor Christine or little Christine and her mother had to find a way to survive. Shortly after being abandoned by her father, Julie, her mother, started dating and eventually married a man by the name of Edward Hewish. Who was probably not a good guy, which is, that's the thing. When a woman is this vulnerable, she has a little one, she doesn't have a lot of prospects, you know, educational or a lot of times women of this like class level, you hook up with a guy to literally survive.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
they had no choice.
So by all accounts, Edward was like, So for most of her upbringing, Christine, from that point on, lived in a house made from two converted railway carriages.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, my kids would think that's cool, But it's probably not cool.
No, hipsters would think that's cool, but people who have to live in railway carriages converted don't think it's cool. I would imagine there's not enough insulation. This is England. It gets cold.
Yeah, and it's freezing all the time. Yeah.
And they were living in the village of Berkshire and Raysbury. Now, in 1951, at the age of 9, she was sent. This is how poor she was. She was sent home. She was sent to a holiday home in Littlehampton because the school health inspector said that she was suffering from malnutrition.
Oh, wow.
So this is what little Christine is going through. Also,
that sucks.
On top of it, various reports said that she was sexually abused by both her stepfather and his friends.
Oh, my God.
Friends and friends, plural, of the fathers of children that she babysat to make extra money.
You know what? None of those people should have a penis. Just cut it right off.
So this is what happens, though, when you're in the 40s and the 50s and a little girl whose father has abandoned her and her mother have no protectors.
Yeah.
So, you know, and oftentimes mothers are not in this predicament, aren't able to take care, or who knows? It sounds like they had a difficult child, a difficult relationship anyway. It's one of those things where this is why you don't force women also to have children that they don't want.
Yep.
But I digress. So, yes, by all accounts, very difficult childhood. So at the age of 17, and to make matters worse, remember I was just saying just two sentences ago about women in that circumstances having babies. So at age 17, she gave birth to a son after an affair with a United States Air Force sergeant.
Okay.
Her mother helped her, you know, prepare for the baby. She gave birth. Unfortunately, the baby only lived. The baby was born prematurely and baby only lived for 6 days.
That's so sad.
God. So Christine, by age 17, has gone through a lot.
She's been through hell.
Yeah.
Hell. This fucking world. Okay. You know what? All right. So go on.
I mean, she's living in a world where she's terrified. Remember how you were saying about Opal Lee? And I was saying, like, can you imagine 500 people coming to your house when you're 12? And then, like, so these, a lot of people, a lot of young people are seeing a lot of terrible stuff in the world. So, so after this, Christine's like, you know what? Later, Gator. I'm out. See you, bitches. So she went to London.
Bye.
And, you know, she went to London with no prospects, no education, really. From my research, it looked like she graduated from high school. But beyond that, she wasn't stellar in school. She didn't really, you know, go to college or even secretary school. She may not even. And that's the thing. When you're this poor, you may not even be able to afford to pay to take the exam.
Yeah.
Or to pay. That's what people don't really understand. That's why poverty is such a trap, because it's like you even need a little money to sometimes take a class, take a test.
College applications are out of control expensive right now. Yeah. Like you can't even apply to college.
And also if you're not raised and like encouraged in your home to be like to even go to school, or for her for a woman in this time, it'd be like secretarial school. That would be like something that, you know, a working class girl could aspire to. Right.
Or make her own money and
make her own money.
Yeah. So, take care of herself.
Now, by all accounts, she was a very beautiful girl, too. So which is, I just can only imagine that was kind of hard for her because she's really pretty. Yeah. But then she's being abused by these weird, creepy dudes because, you know, they're creepy dads.
You know that.
So she's like, I'm out. At least I'm going to London. Let's see. So she went to London and she worked as a waitress. That's an easy job to get at first, especially if you're an attractive young woman, at a restaurant on Baker Street, where she met a woman by the name of Maureen O'Connor.
Okay.
Now, Maureen had another job. She was also working there at the restaurant, but she had another job at a place called Murray's Cabaret Club in Soho.
Okay.
So Maureen's like, you're a pretty girl. Let me introduce you to the owner. When the owner met Christine, he was like, you're hired now.
Okay.
He hired her to work at the cabaret club as a topless showgirl.
Of course he did.
Now, Christine had aspirations of becoming a model. And again, everyone knows about Twiggy in the 60s, like, and she was beautiful enough to be a model and skinny. And that was the one thing she had going for it, her looks. So, you know, she thought, okay, well, let's do this. And again, this is a woman who's been sexually abused for most of her teenage years on up. Yeah. So she was not uncomfortable with nudity, and part of her psyche was like, well, this is what men want, so this is what I'll do, even though I'm not crazy about it.
At least I'm getting paid.
Right. So, and she can make her own money. So also at this club, it kind of reminds me of, like, it's basically a strip club, but it's also one where the girls have drinks with guys, they sit with them, that kind of thing. These kinds of clubs have been around probably since the beginning Yeah, exactly.
It's a musical podcast now. You're welcome.
So, and again, it was Murray's is basically a place where a girl like Christine could possibly meet influential men who could help her with her desire to become a model, and she was interested in becoming an actress.
Okay.
This is a place where a girl like her could, that could make it happen. Again, this is not a time. This is this, we're in the 60s now. This is not a time where a girl, we're entering into the 60s, this is the late 50s, a girl with no prospects. And England is highly classist. The classes are very strict in a lot of ways.
Very.
So, and I'll again, the time period. So this is like looking up for her. This is like real possibility where a girl with the right brains, right looks can definitely marry well. That's best case scenario or best case scenario, hook her up to an actual modeling and acting career. Second best case scenario is to marry, find a rich husband.
Right.
So, or a third best case scenario, find a rich sugar daddy who will maybe put you up in a nice place.
Right.
You know, maybe you can get a Jaguar out of him or what have you. Right.
Be the best scenario. I'm just saying.
Do that hustle, girl. Right. Basically to improve her life drastically because we know where she's coming from. So, again, remember, we're going into the 60s. So the 60s is what? The swinging 60s, like social mores are loosening up. You know, this is also during a time where people from those strict classes here and in the UK and also in the United States, where they were actually intermingling more with the lower classes.
Yes.
Because the lower classes, youth culture was really big. And she's very, very young. She's 17, 18, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So this is a good place for her to be. The toplessness notwithstanding. So was here at Murray's that she also met a man by the name of Stephen Ward, an osteopath. Basically an osteopath, I don't think they have this career anymore. It would be, I guess, a chiropractor, but he was basically a medically trained professional who would physically manipulate the body's muscle tissue and bones.
That's maybe kind you've of heard chiropractory. Of well, an osteopath now like x-rays your arm and says, yeah, it's broken.
Oh, yeah. So that's not what he was. Okay. He kind of reminded me of, that's the best description I could, you know, give. But he was actually, and he trained in the United States to become an osteopath. So he was from a solidly middle class, slightly upper middle class family, but he was not part of the aristocracy. So he's not part of the bougie set, but he definitely came from a better background than her. And he was older than her. So he, by all accounts, was very successful at his business. And he was also a successful artist. His success in his medical practice and the art world also made him very many influential friends, which is why he was a member. He would come to Murray's and, you know, he was also, like I said, considerably older than Christine. So many thought that he maybe was like a sugar daddy or like that kind of thing. But throughout her life, she maintained that they always had a very platonic relationship.
Okay.
Even though from this point on, after she met him, they would go to parties together. Honestly, again, it's the 60s. It's coming up into the 60s. So I think for him, he's a guy who has influential friends. So he's kind of like the good time guy. Like he's like the connector. And I think he liked to surround himself with pretty young women.
Yeah.
Because that made him the dude.
Like, yeah. I know that guy.
And so at first I was like, is he a pimp? Like, but I really, after my research, I don't think so. But if you okay. saw him, you would be like, he always has beautiful girls around him. But that wasn't really his thing. But okay. it did make him, he was able to get invited to hunting parties, gentlemen's club, because he knew a lot of people. He also knew a lot of people that were not pretty young girls. Like,
right.
I feel like he had aspirations to getting into the upper class. Like he was a bit of a like a social climber. That's kind of like the vibe I'm getting from him. So, but he, again, he comes from a better, a more established family, a background than Christine. So, okay. but he liked her. He also thought she was very beautiful, and he would often encourage her, like, girl, this is the best thing you got going. You got a $1 million face. Like,
okay.
He sketched her multiple times.
Did he pay her for those sketches? How's she making money?
He actually, honestly, I'm getting kind of like these pretty girls were kind of a bit of a beard for him, because I'm kind of getting that he might be gay or bisexual, even though
there we in the go. TV,
yeah, now even on the TV like show, yeah, yeah, even though in the TV show that was on HBO Max about him, because she would ask him, aren't you sleeping with me? You slept with my other friend. And he's like, because you and I are basically the same person.
Okay.
So she said she looked at him as like a father figure, but I would say probably okay. an older brother figure. And when I get more into it, that's the feeling I'm getting, that maybe you didn't get the sense that it was a creepy thing, but from the outside looking okay. in, it looked like maybe he was pimping these young girls out or da da da. But inside the relationship, she's like, no, we never slept together. He okay. never like that kind of thing. Right. So this is Stephen Ward. Now, okay. He, like I said, he even sketched her at one point. And the sketch of her, one of them is very sweet and angelic looking. It's not okay. overly sexual. It's just her, I think, kind of like how he saw her. Later on, some of those sketches would become very valuable. Now, in her autobiography, Secrets and Lies, she maintained that that Stephen Ward was also working as a double agent, having contact with both senior members of MI5 and the KGB.
Oh, my God.
Was passing UK state secrets to the latter.
Okay.
That was never really proven.
Okay. Alleged.
I will say that alleged that okay. MI5 definitely were following. Again, this is the Cold War. Yeah. MI5 was definitely following Stephen, as they were following a lot of other people.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And one of the reasons they thought, and maybe perhaps Christine may have thought this, is because one of Stephen's friends was a Soviet naval attaché by the name of Yevgeny Ivanov.
Okay.
With whom Christine had a short sexual relationship with. Oh, okay. And he was married, but he was in England from Russia as like an attaché at the embassy, that kind of thing. So, of course, MI5 was watching him. If I was MI5, I'd be watching the hell out of Ivanov. Of course. Yeah. It's the Cold War. So, and again, being with Christine, I will say Christine is not necessarily the most reliable witness in some of this, because she was so young. Again, 18, 19. These are considerably older people. They're all kind of hanging out. She seemed very young for her age as far as like maturity level also.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, and it's the swinging 60s. The sexual mores was a little bit more fluid, especially from a girl of her class, which around some of these men would just consider her a pretty plaything, and some of them would actually want to get to know her. So
yeah.
that's the context. Now, she hung out with Stephen a lot. She even moved in with him. So okay. she started staying at his place. Again, of course I would stay at his place, because his place is a lot nicer than what she could probably be able to afford.
Hell
right?
yeah.
And she, along with a friend of hers named Mandy Rice Davies, I've seen it also spelled Davis, but Mandy was just as pretty. She was blonde, and Christine was a brunette, pretty brunette.
Okay.
So again, Steven's walking around. He's living with a pretty blonde, a pretty brunette. These young girls. He knows all these influential people. He's like living the life.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's living the life. So, Mandy, Christine, and Stephen stayed basically together in Stephen's place. And basically, okay. they were just hanging out. They go to parties, hang out, and that kind of thing. They okay. would also often hang out at Stephen's country cottage, a place called Spring Cottage, that okay. was within the grounds of the country home of Lord Astor.
Okay.
And the name of the home was Cliveden. So basically, exactly, Spring Cottage yes. was on the grounds of Cliveden.
Okay.
So one day they were hanging out, actually on the weekend of July 8th through the 9th, 1961. Okay. So we're in okay. the 60s now. They were hanging out, actually. And Stephen's like, it's hot. So let's go over to Lord Astor's place and get in the pool. So they all go over there. They get in the pool. And they didn't realize that Lord Astor was there having a dinner party. And now Astor's upper class, you know, and they're
right.
and they're having a small dinner party. It's very small. And so they the Lord and Lady were there having a small dinner party. At the party, Stephen Ward, Christine's friend, introduced uh-huh. her to one of Lord Astor's guests, a very married and older man by the name of John Profumo.
Okay.
Now, he was 46. Christine's what? 19.
19? Yeah.
And John Profumo, what? Which uh-huh. she called Jack, that was very common, like our Jack Kennedy as well, uh-huh. JFK, was the Secretary of State for War. So he was an MP, Member of Parliament.
Right. Okay. Yes, of course.
So,
I'm British now.
Yes, exactly. Now, some sources also say that she was actually hanging out with Ivanov, the Russian attaché,
right.
the same weekend, because she's fooling around with him. She's hanging out. Again, she's a young woman that, honestly, I think Christine in her mind was just kind of hanging out and hoping to meet a guy that could help her get into modeling and acting.
Right.
And Steven's like, girl, you need to latch one of these men mm-hmm. to get mm-hmm. you paid. You need to do yeah. what Mandy doing, because that's what Mandy doing. Mandy yeah. trying to figure out how to get paid. Okay.
He's not wrong. So,
she's not wrong. Now, so they're all at this party. So they decide to just basically combine the parties, and they all like hanging out. And you can imagine, this is the 60s. So the older people are thinking, well, the young people are around. Maybe we shouldn't be so stuffy. Again, England was bombed during the Blitz, like during yeah. World War II. They had the Blitz. They're still recovering.
Yep.
It's just a lot of, so I think a lot of people, a lot of the older, more established people are like, life is so fucking short.
Yes.
Maybe we should have a little bit more fun.
Yeah.
So they started, you know, they basically, it was like the rest of the weekend, they were all sort of hanging out.
Okay.
Shortly after this meeting, Christine started having an affair with Jack Profumo.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Like, I don't know, now, but like,
yeah,
I know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. And I'm sure it's one of those things where his wife was like, okay, let's don't embarrass me. Make it quick. Whatever.
Right.
he was married to a, and I think I didn't write down her name, but she was a well-known actress. Very beautiful woman. Very beautiful woman as well. So Jack had great taste. And so they had a short affair. It was intense. He's an older man. She's a very pretty young girl. And it either ended in August of 1961. So this is July.
Oh,
they all meet beginning of July. After the security services warned Profumo of the possible dangers of mixing with Stephen Ward's circle. Because remember, MI5's kind of watching him.
Right.
Or some people say that the affair continued until December.
Okay.
I think it probably considered until it. Because he's having sex with this beautiful young girl.
He's definitely putting his penis in her. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. As long as he can. So, yeah. But it did fizzle out. So after the affair, which was a bit of an open secret, they were not right. fooling anybody. It was kind of one of those things. But the affair did end by the end of 1961. So whether it ended in August or in December, but it, by the end of 1961, it was over. So after their relationship ended, Christine, who's just 19, went on with her life and began dating a Jamaican jazz singer by the name of Lucky Gordon.
Okay.
And an Antiguan jazz promoter by the name of Johnny Edgecombe.
Oh, she's dating
them both. In 1962. They kind of overlap a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
I'm
she
not
was,
judging. Just
yeah, asking. I think she was dating Lucky first, and then she went on and started dating Johnny. But then Lucky got jealous, and yeah. So this is a lot of like messy young people crap going on with Christine,
yeah.
which is so ironic in how she got tied up in all this other stuff, because she's just basically living her life like a messy 19-year-old.
Yeah.
If she lived today, she would be making so much money by being on a reality TV show.
Mm-hmm. She really would.
I feel like she kind of has the energy of a... what's the one that broke out on the Jersey Shore? Is it...
Oh, my God. Snooki.
Snooki. But, you know, Snooki's not even Italian-American. It's so funny.
She's not? What?
No, she's like Venezuelan or something. Like,
oh, my God.
She's not even Italian-American. But anyway. But, you know, Snooki was so, like, lovable. But Christine is really beautiful. So imagine a really beautiful Snooki.
Okay.
Like,
I mean, Snooki's a pretty girl. No judgment. But, like...
Snooki's a pretty girl. But, like, the thing that... Snooki kind of reminds me of, like, Cardi B. Like, their personality is so engaging. They're so charismatic. And they're just fun girls. And you just like them, right? And then later on, they get really savvy about, like, their persona and making money and da-da-da-da. But the first season of Snooki was, like, the breakout star because she was so much fun.
Yes.
And just very charismatic and likable. And Christine kind of reminds me of her. But without like the game plan of like,
right.
So imagine she's just hanging out, dating sexy black dudes, which was kind of a no-no. And then like, but I think in her mind, she's like, I'm going to date whoever's nice to me. Cause she comes from a very difficult background.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and in the TV show I watched, she was saying her mother didn't, it was like, you hanging out with those darkies. She's like, first of all, don't say that. And she's like, I lost my virginity to this, Nigerian, fellow, and she was like, I thought he was the most beautiful man I'd ever seen, and besides Robert Mitchum, and she's like, he was so lovely, and so she's dating Lucky, and then I think she started dating Johnny. Lucky was very jealous, not so much as Johnny, but Lucky's one of those guys like, you move on. He was like, you still my woman, and it's like, okay, this is not what we're doing. Mm-hmm. So there was considerable jealousy between the two men, and apparently they had a fight in October of 1962.
Okay.
When Johnny slashed Lucky's face with a knife.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay, West Side Story.
Yeah. So Christine ended the relationship with Johnny a few months later in December.
Okay.
He was so upset with her that he turned up at Steven's house where she was escaping, like, she was kind of living with Johnny and then going back and forth. Because part of her is like, well, I don't want to mooch off of you, Steven. I need to get my life together. But she's 19.
Right.
So Johnny gets mad, shows up at the house, at Steven's house, and starts shooting at the building.
Oh, my God.
This is so fucking messy.
Fuck.
Now. You break it off with this guy. He shows up. And in the TV show I saw, I don't know how true that is. Basically, Lucky was harassing her. And then she went to a club that she knew Lucky was going to be playing at with Johnny. And then he and Johnny got into it. And that's when Johnny slashed his face.
Okay.
And so Christine got upset that Johnny did that and broke up with him. And then he's like, it's your fault because you. So that could have happened. I don't know if that was creative license, but this is very, very messy. This is very like 19, 20 year old foolishness, like messiness. So he shows up and starts shooting. Again, this is England, 1962. They still don't have a lot of guns. In the United States, we'd be like, okay, shooting, but that wouldn't be unusual. This is very unusual.
This is very unusual now. Like,
yeah.
That's okay.
Now, now there is an alternate POV. There's another story about how this came about. The shooting was that, according to, at one point, Christine said that, that Johnny, that Lucky had attacked her at knife point on her way to Steven's house one day and assaulted her, raped her, basically.
Oh, shit.
And held her hostage for 2 days. So Johnny, in an attempt to fight back, like beat Lucky's ass.
Yeah.
Went and fought with him and slashed his face.
Okay, that's more. Yeah. That's more slash face worthy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that. So some people say that that's the reason, like, but who knows? It's, again, that's alleged. I don't even know if that's true. What is true, the fact is that Johnny shot at Steven's door.
Okay. So then what they do?
So the cops came.
Yeah. That sounds right.
Like, Yeah, they were like, what the fuck? We have to have an investigation. And so while they were interviewing her a couple days later, this is when, because, and again, Stephen Ward would live in a posh neighborhood also.
Right.
So there's a gun involved. There's like, what are we, Americans?
I know. What the hell? What?
There's a posh neighborhood.
We're not bloody Americans. That was a really good
Johnny was arrested and Christine was questioned. Okay. But during her questioning, authorities realized how well connected she was, or rather how Stephen Ward was. Because remember, MI5's following him, but local police are not. So they're all starting to put together. They also found out when they talked to her about her relationship with John Profumo. He's an MP, member of parliament. And Ivanov, a Russian. Again, this is England, 1960s Russians.
Oh my God.
So everyone's like, what the fuck? And they're like, oh, there's a story here, right? So they weren't the only ones. When this kind of stuff got out about this young, pretty girl, who may have been sleeping with an MP and a Russian officer at the same time, they're like, what the fuck is going on? Right?
Yeah.
So when word got out to the press went fucking insane. They pounced on Christine. They parked outside Stephen's house. They were like hounding her, wanted to know all the salacious details of her life. So you know how in the United States in the 90s we had the Monica Lewinsky thing?
Absolutely.
Christine is the precursor to Monica Lewinsky, but there's like a Russian person involved.
But there's like a Russian element to the whole thing, which makes it far more interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So again, this is the British press. So they've always been just insatiable in a lot
they're
of ways. So
trash. They're, yes.
Yes. And all of this is getting back to officials, MI5s knowing this. In the TV show, again, I keep going to that. I don't know how true this is because I feel like they took a lot of creative licenses, like making it compelling and like, but MI5's watching Stephen's house, and then all of a sudden the Russians are watching Stephen's house.
Oh my God, everyone's like, two sides of the house.
So they question Christine again. She's a 19-year-old just being like, my boyfriend, and then, oh yeah, I slept with Jack like last year, because again, the affair's been over for about a year now.
Yeah, she's like, that was like, so long ago. What are you talking about?
In a 19-year-old's mind, I was like, oh my God, that was so long ago. I was 20.
I was like literally a different person. I was 18 and now I'm almost 20. Ew.
So this is all in connection with the shooting of that Johnny did at Stephen's house.
Right.
So she's giving evidence. And then when Johnny's trial starts, all of this like connections and they're just trying to make all of this figure out what's going on. But it's all salacious. It's MP, like I said, a Russian guy, all that, like a young, pretty showgirl, you know, and from a gentleman's club, that kind of thing. Now, and then. Oh, I forgot to say, Stephen Ward was also known to be given really wild parties, like swinging parties, basically.
Okay.
Like for his upper crust friends. So I have a feeling that he was kind of like the connection between these old gross married dudes and young girls and like sex parties. Yeah.
Do you remember the musical The Wild Party? That's what I'm thinking of right now. Oh, my God. It's written by someone. I don't remember. But it's very well like... It's like the off-Broadway, well-done musical. Like, it's... I saw an off-Broadway version of it. It was really good.
Maybe this was the inspiration.
I wonder if this is the inspiration, because it's like... Yeah. It really is, like, what you're describing.
Yeah. So, but in Christine's mind, she's thinking, oh, my boyfriend, I gotta go and I gotta testify and da, da, da. So when Johnny's trial starts, rumors about this showgirl, the Russian and the MP, right? It's all like in the papers and all this other stuff. She didn't show up at the trial to give her evidence. She had gone to Madrid for vacation.
Oh, well, because, you know, it's lovely that time of year.
Because, again, she's 20. She's 19. She's 20. And she's not really thinking.
Right.
And somebody probably offered her a trip to Madrid. And she's like, hells yeah, I'm going to Madrid.
Let's go.
So now, by this time, Jack, the MP, the officials of parliament are like, what the fuck are you doing? Because and he's part of the Conservative Party. They're in
power. Oh, of course he is. Absolutely. Oh, 100,000%.
And he was presumed to have become one day prime minister. So even though he was a junior official at this time, he was being groomed and seen as that kind of thing, right? So, but the people in Parliament are like, what the fuck is going on, Jack?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he initially denied any impropriety with Christine. He's like, yeah, I knew her, but there was never any propriety. Basically, I never had sex with that woman. Yeah. But when the news of her skipping out on testifying in the trial of Johnny, which is a completely different trial, the press started speculating that it had been that she fled or been led to taken to Madrid to avoid answering questions, embarrassing questions that would might implicate people in high places.
Mm. Yeah, I could see that. I could
All
fully
of this
see that.
Led the Labour Party, which is the opposite of the Conservative Party, to have some ammunition against the Conservative Party, the party that's in power. So speculation also that a pretty young girl who was sleeping with an MP and a Russian spy was all you needed in 1962 to cause a scandal.
Wow. You need so much more now. Like,
so much more. So that's, when his... Yeah. When his higher ups was like, what's going on here? He was like, oh, no, there's never any impropriety. I met her at Lord Astor's play. Like, even though it's an open secret that they had had an affair.
Right.
So to save face, because there's a lot of pressure from his party to be like, you got to nip this in the bud. So on March 22nd, 1963, he denied the affair to the members of parliament, saying there was no impropriety in his relationship with Christine. And he even threatened to sue for libel. Like, keep my name out y'all mouth. Well, okay. I'm gonna sue you motherfuckers, right?
Yes, but his penis did go inside her. That did happen.
But he's playing this game to put emphasis on it. That seemed to work because the attention, they were like, that's all we need. Parliament's like, we accepted this, da-da-da-da-da-da, what have you. Again, this is now we're in 1963. So 62 to 63 is crazy. At the height of this, because she's plastered on newspapers, the covers of newspapers.
Right.
Pretty young girl. She, at the height of this, she set for a portrait by a very famous artist by the name of Louis Morley.
Okay.
The photo shoot was to promote a proposed film called The Keeler Affair.
Okay.
That was never released in the UK, but according to some reports, it's a very famous picture of her. She's basically straddling a chair and she looks like she's nude and a lot of her is in shadow.
Okay.
And the producers wanted this to use this as an advertisement for the film. So the photographer wanted her, like I said, to sit like that completely nude. She was like, no, I don't really want to do that. And so it looks like she is nude sitting on the chair facing us, the camera straddling the chair and facing us. But in actuality, she's like, no, she has on knickers. She has on panties. But it looks like she's nude. And again, this is 1963. Yeah. Right now, we'd be like, oh, that's like tasteful and Vogue.
That's like so beautiful.
Like whatever.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this was scandalous. And again, this is the girl who was purportedly sleeping with an MP and a Russian spy.
Yeah. Yeah, it all connects somehow.
Yeah. So now remember how I said that there were two kind of stories about how Johnny ended up slashing Lucky?
Yes.
The second one. So another fact. So I don't know exactly how that kind of happened. But another fact is that in April of 1963, Christine was attacked and she accused Lucky, who was arrested and charged.
Okay.
So this was in April of 1963. In May of 1963, Stephen Wartz was charged with prostitution. Because again, his reputation is catching up with him, right? That's what he said. Because again, he's very well connected with higher ups. He's having these parties.
Wait, is he charged with prostituting himself?
No.
I forget the
term was like, basically Pippin? He was a bad influence on young women or something like that. It's basically prostitution.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, during the trial, Christine testified about their relationship, about her relationship during Stephen's trial. So she has to go to Johnny's trial, Stephen's trial, and
so
then Lucky's trial.
It's exhausting.
Somebody's trial. Stephen thought that his charges was a witch hunt.
Okay.
To basically silence him, because by this time, MI5 had confirmed by all accounts that Profumo had not pass any secrets from the like to the Russians, that he was not in bed with Stephen. And really, basically, it kind of cleared Stephen from being a spy. And when all of this broke out, Russia pulled Ivanov. They're like, you come back home. So he went back to Russia and lived out a long, healthy life. He was like, my name's Bennett. Ain't in it. I'm out. So, but at Stephen's trial, Christine had to testify. So higher ups were very nervous about her testimony because she's a wild card. She's 20. She's 20, 21 now. She's a wild card. Like, and Stephen, I think Stephen basically was like, play your cards right. You get out of this with money, with influence.
Right.
I don't know if Christine just didn't know what was going on because she was so young, but she did testify. Okay. She wanted to be truthful. So her affair with Profumo came up.
Okay.
And because of that, he had to come clean to his party leaders, which he did in June of on June 4th, 1963. And on June 5th, the very next day, he resigned.
Yeah, he did. Because that's what they used to do.
Yeah, they don't do that's what they used anymore. To do when they they don't do it anymore. At least not in the United States. Now that same day on the 5th, Lucky's trial started. Because remember, she accused him of attacking her. He maintained his innocence and said that he had two witnesses that could vouch for him, but the witnesses couldn't be found.
Interesting.
So on June 7th, principally from the testimony of Christine, Lucky was found guilty and sentenced to 3 years in prison.
Wow. Did he do it? I wonder.
So now she's got a lot going on. So she can't even, she didn't even have time for that. That was in June. In July, Stephen's trial started. So he was charged in May and then his trial started in July.
Okay.
So
that's a long time.
Some people were trying to get to him, I think. So they charged him technically of living off immoral earnings earned through Christine and Mandy. Based on contributions to the household, because remember they were living with him, loan repayments that the two had made to him. So they basically, there's no way in hell that he was living off of them because
they were living off of him.
Yeah, because he, as an osteopath at that time, he was making about £150,000 in today's money, which is about what, $200,000 a year.
Yeah, that he's fine. He doesn't need them at all.
He's also who knows what he's doing. He was not making money off of them. So after summing up basically Stephen felt like he was being railroaded by higher ups who just kind of wanted him to go away. People who probably didn't like him at this point, or like had been using his connections to meet young pretty girls. That's what I think he was. I think he was a way for them to meet young pretty girls. And he liked being around society people and that kind of thing. So he was found guilty.
Okay.
But from the pressure, he actually took an overdose of sleeping pills and died 3 days later before the jury could return its verdict and sentence him.
Wow.
So, he killed himself. So,
listen, I'm pretty sure we should go see the wild party. I want to say it's the same story.
It's probably the same story. Now, in the closing days of Stephen's trial, Lucky's assault conviction was overturned by the Court of Appeals when his missing witnesses were found and testified that the evidence Christine had given was false.
Oh, shit.
Because of that, and again, Stephen's pretty much gone. He can't really help her because he's been her protector in a lot of ways. He can't really help her. So in December of 1963, she pleaded guilty to charges of perjury and was sentenced to 9 months in prison.
Oh, God. Okay.
And she served about 4.5 months of it.
Whew.
In October of 63, the Prime Minister McMillan, Jack Profumo's boss, resigned due to the fallout from the sex scandal with Christine and Profumo.
Yeah.
Now, many say that these events led directly to the Conservative Party being swept out of power in the 1964 elections the following year.
Oh, that's
and led
a good
the
thing.
way Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, well, that's a good thing. And it led the way for the Labour Party to take over in English politics, ending a 13-year conservative rule by that time. Now, they would remain in power from 64 up until about 79 when Margaret Thatcher comes into power.
Oh, yeah, the 80s, just we all fucked it all up. Fucked it up everywhere.
Margaret Thatcher was not good for England. Any British person will tell you that. And she remained in power until 1990. So that's a side note. Now, after her release from prison in 1964, Christine, now just 22, tried to go on with her life.
Okay.
But again, her one stable connection to her new life in London was Stephen. And he's gone. He's gone. And she's a pariah. And this is a time where they put a lot of this blame squarely on the shoulders of a 22-year-old woman.
Yeah.
Instead of the men.
Yeah, bizarre.
Because Jack
wanted to put their penis in her, right? Yeah. Okay.
And it's in one of my, through my research, I was looking at this one interview because there's been countless movies and TV shows and plays about this. And John Hurt was, I think he played Perfumo in a movie called Scandal from like 89. And they're on a talk show promoting it and Christine came out. And the interviewer was a woman who she clearly was judging Christine. And Christine was very poised. I was actually very impressed. She was very poised. And like, again, this is 89 where this kind of thing, she would be like a marked woman. She'd have a scarlet letter on her. And the interviewer was so, being so judgmental that Hurt was kind of like, you could tell he was getting upset at how she was treating Christine.
Yeah, good, good.
And again, this is a young woman who doesn't have a lot of education, doesn't come from, you know, but she was very poised. And you know, a lot of this blame went squarely on the shoulders of this harlot, quote unquote harlot, young Jezebel, this kind of thing. And the men basically, with the exception of Stephen, and you know, and again, she's not an angel because I don't know why she would say that, that Lucky had raped her when he hadn't.
I actually, that bothers me a whole lot.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it could have been that he did, but maybe she got her dates mixed up, or I don't know. It was a lot of messy. Yeah. But she was 22, and I'm glad Lucky got up. But Lucky wasn't an angel either. So it's not like she's just random, like, accused some random black dude. Like, I don't think that's what was going on. But also, as a young white woman, she probably has no idea what that's like to accuse a black man of raping you.
No, she doesn't.
So, again, she was 22 by the time all this was over.
Wow.
So after that, she tried to go on with her life. She had two brief marriages, a child from each union.
Okay.
And the oldest child was primarily raised by her mother, Julie. As for money, now, Perfumo went on. He already had money. He was a millionaire. He stayed away from the limelight, basically. And he kept a low profile and kind of resurfaced to do charity work along with his wife.
Okay.
He kind of repaired his, he repaired his reputation later on. Maybe like 15, 20 years later. And he eventually became a knight. He was knighted.
Oh, okay.
So, but he had money. He could keep a low profile. Christine didn't have any money. And the money that she made from interviews and all this other stuff during this time largely went to pay for lawyer's fees.
Yeah. Yeah.
So by the 1970s, so this is by end of 74, she gets out. So by the 1970s, probably almost 10 years later, 7 or 8 years later, she reportedly said, quote, "I was not living at the time. I was surviving," end quote. So again, she doesn't have any money. She doesn't have any marketable skills. She probably can't get a job even in a department store, which would be the kind of job a woman in her position would want to get, because at least it's, you know, respectable. It's in a safe environment. They would not hire this woman. She was infamous in, it's kind of like what Monica Lewinsky went through afterwards.
Yeah.
That's why she had a purse line and that kind of thing. It's so sad because if Christine was living now, she could totally make money.
she would reality be show. So rich. She would have a YouTube channel and a reality show. She would get sponsors on Instagram for $10,000 a sponsor. Yeah.
She would be able to at least make a living. If not, she wouldn't have to, by all accounts, live in like you know, a one bedroom apartment or a studio apartment, like, and just barely scrape by because of her need for money. She would often, it seemed like she was an attention whore. Like, she would be like, oh, I have another part of my story I need to share. I have another this. I have. Right. So she would publish several accounts of her life. One in which she claimed she became pregnant as a result of the relationship and then had an abortion, you know, that kind of thing. But it's like, is it true? She was just trying to make some money. Now, her portrait by Stephen was acquired by the National Portrait Gallery in 1984.
Okay.
In 1988, she made an extended appearance on Channel 4 discussion program After Dark.
Okay.
And she, in it, I watched a segment of one of them, and she basically was explaining, like, what her mindset was at different parts. Because as you can imagine, people were, like, still very, very interested in this kind of
thing.
Yeah. But also, I feel like a lot of these appearances were for money. Like, you know, when the movie came out in 89, she appeared at the premiere. And then later on, she kind of criticized the movie. And they're like, well, why did you show up? She's like, well, because they gave me £5,000 to show up.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah.
I'm hungry. Yeah. And I have bills to pay. So
like she, and also because she just made, I think she made a lot of stupid mistakes, but she made a lot of stupid young girl mistakes.
Yeah.
Who doesn't have anyone in her corner giving her advice, giving her great legal advice, helping her figure out how to make a living. Like, you know, at the height of this in 62 and 63, she tried to do modeling and acting, but she couldn't get representation.
Right.
You know, so it's so funny because I think had she been in the United States, it may have worked out a little bit differently because,
I've always been like.
So she basically just tried to eke out a living for most of her life after, you know, through the 80s and the 90s and keep her self-respect. I think as she got older, she probably realized, oh, yeah, I was like, I think she had no idea how much potential trouble she was in.
Yeah, I think she realized it when they started making movies about her life. Right.
Yeah.
Like that'll, you know.
But it's also that thing like, well, where's my money? Like Althea Gibson kind of thing. Like, this is great. All this, but where the money? where the money at?
I would like to buy a house. I would like to buy a car. You know?
Now, so she, again, one of her second son, I believe he's her second son, they were closer. So he's usually the person that they talk to when there's new stuff about her in more recent years. So on December 5th, 2017, her son Seymour Platt announced that she had died at the age of 75 at the Princess Royal University Hospital in London. She had been ill for some months, suffering from chronic COPD. Her funeral took place on December 16th, 2017 at the West London Crematorium and Kensal Green Cemetery. Now, like I said, you and I on this side of the pond have not really heard of her, but in England, and they definitely have heard of her. So in popular culture, she has been portrayed in many, many things. Like I mentioned briefly, go and look them all up. I'm actually still only halfway through like the TV show because it's really, the actors who plays her is fantastic.
Okay.
But she was popularized and played by actress Gala Gordon in the second season of The Crown in 2017.
Oh, I really still haven't started watching The Crown. Yeah. I know.
Now, there was a touring exhibition funded by the Arts Council England and Arts Council of Wales called Dear Christine, which opened in June of 2019 and toured through February of 2020.
Just in time.
And there's so basically this was a culmination of like a 4-year project by artist curator Fionn Wilson to reclaim and reframe Christine's scandal story from her own points of view. And it featured work from 20 women artists in order to focus on the female perspective on a narrative that has been mostly been led by men. So it's the reframing of that.
Damn straight.
Yeah. What? Now, the exhibition had been described by journalist and writer Julie Burchill as, quote, a thing of beauty without cruelty. Critic and writer Ian McKay wrote about it, quote, in several important ways, Dear Christine, the exhibition seeks with some noble intent to rescue Christine's image and experience and reprocess it, rescuing it from the newspaper front page keeler that is etched into the collective consciousness, end quote. The exhibition was also featured in the Morning Star, the Daily Telegraph, and the International Times.
Okay.
So that is just a little bit about the story of life and scandal times of Christine Margaret Keeler.
That is an incredible story.
Isn't that crazy?
I know that everyone in England's like, duh, but I'm fascinated. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Also, the fact that like this young girl could like be in the room with like a potential Russian spy but have a connection with a senior member of mm-hmm. Parliament. And like, and it's all because men can't keep their things in their pants.
Yeah. Like the zipper goes up, gentlemen. Up. No.
Because Ivanov was also married and his wife was probably like, motherfucker, what you doing? Like,
put your pants on.
Yeah. And I hate to say this, but everybody, with the exception of Stephen, all the other men, the white men, I should say, because Lucky and Johnny, Johnny did shoot at somebody. It's like, brother, ooh, this, where'd you get a gun? No, like, in the TV show, the gun actually comes from Christine. They're playing around with it one day and he puts it in his drawer. Mm. So when he's mad at her, he takes it out. I don't know how accurate all those facts are,
right.
But like, it's just a lot of stupid, dumb mistakes that very young people made while being mixed up with very dumb, stupid mistakes that old people made.
Yeah. 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 It's fascinating. It really is. But I like this. I like the new, like, here's what actually happened.
Yeah.
You know, she was just a young girl and these old white men were just kind of throwing her around a little bit. Like, don't blame her. You made choices.
And there's something to be said about the modern world. Like we were saying, if this happened today, she could, managers and stuff would find her and be like, oh no, I'll represent you. I can get you a bag, girl. I can get you a couple bags. Yeah. Like, we could do OnlyFans.
We start with
that. She makes so much money on OnlyFans.
Just to invest, you get a nice place. And then, exactly.
Yeah, so that is Christine Keeler.
No one's coming to me for that. Okay.
You or me either, so. Well, guys, that wraps it up for another episode of Notorious Women Podcast. Like I said at the top of the show, remember to follow us on all the things.
That's right.
Starting with giving us a 5-star review in the Apple Store so people can find us. Also, leave a review, like they're so pretty and smart, but like just because we'd like to read them on the show starting next week. You can also go to our Patreon and you can give us a bag at patreon.com/notoriouswomen. That's patreon.com/notoriouswomen. And Miriam, how else can they support the show?
You guys, you should come to our Instagram, which is a fun place to be. I like to find all the fun things. You can also, it's Notorious Women Podcast. Very, very easy to find. You can also DM us there if you have thoughts or ideas. We also have a YouTube page where you can listen to episodes too, which is also Notorious Women Podcast. If you want to email us longer things, it's notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. And that is that.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you. We are glad to be back. And we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.